Welcome to the Leisman Podcast on NBC Sports. I'm Paul Papps. He's Andrew Perloff. Our buddy Lindsay is here with us. Let's set the scene. We are in Los Angeles, Pearl. Yeah. We've come here a few times. We go over to the Westwood One NBC Sports Radio studios. It's fantastic over here.
Oh, it's so cool. Now, the thing is, there's a weather situation here in L.A. So
unbelievable.
Yeah, we came from a serious nor'easter, the third nor'easter in a row. And then we get here and people are apologizing for the weather and explain why.
It's about 58 degrees and cloudy and overcast. It's maybe even 60 today.
Yeah.
And all the people over at DirecTV and NBC Sports over here are like, oh, man.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're going to make it through. Thoughts and prayers.
Yeah. They're like, apologize. There's like a 30% chance of rain. And meanwhile, there's like feet of snow that are hitting our houses right now.
But don't you think that would happen to if we moved to L.A., even though you're from the Northeast, mm-hmm. I'm from Chicago and lived in the Northeast, in a couple of years, we get soft weather-wise real fast.
Oh, of course. Now, you know, the big issue with me in L.A. is obviously incredible TV talent like myself had many offers to move out to this coast.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't stay tan enough out here. So this is like overcast LA. No one's in the sun. This is perfect for me.
Right. It's pretty cool out here. The other thing we got going on, big mistake. We got to LA. We got up early because of the time change and I didn't have breakfast and I'm a little salty.
Oh, Paul. Listen, you know, we're friends. We're not like, you're not like my kid or anything. I can't force you to eat, but I tried like three times. I'm like, dude, you're 3 hours behind. You got to put some calories in. So what happens to you? How do you perceive yourself when you don't eat?
I feel like a child who had too much candy. Yeah. But instead of having too much candy, I had no food. So I'm kind of like a little manic.
Yeah, you're like a Wolverine.
You get that way, too, when you're hungry.
I do. But I described, you were actually behind your back. I said, you guys got to make sure Paul gets some food or he's going to rip this place up like a Wolverine.
I know. Well, I wanted to have like a breakfast burrito or some chorizo and eggs like Jonathan Mardukas in Midnight Run. And there's this place called Pepe's Tacos over Marina Del Rey, Culver City area. And I tried to talk you into going there. And I know a huge Mexican breakfast at 7:45 in the morning is not a smart move for your day, you know, gastronomically. But I should have gone.
Yeah, your problem is you're holding out for a home run. You won't hit a single. You won't even go to the commissary and get a Kind bar. You won't do that at all.
When I'm on the road, I don't want to waste a calorie. I want any calories to be good road food, local. It's my thing, and I stand by it. I'm like monastic that way. All right, this was a wild week so far already with NFL free agency moves. Let's start with Tuesday morning. You had a first one up, I think, was Case Keenum going to the Broncos.
Yep.
And he got a 2-year deal. What do you think Case got for 2 years? I predicted that he would get a 2-year deal for $30 million. I said that a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And you said that's probably a little low.
Well, yeah. So this is just my intuition is that he was looking for low 20s.
Per year.
Yes. That they might have talked to the Browns about that kind of figure. And then the Vikings were going to try and come in, if they didn't get Cousins, much lower than that. So somewhere in the middle of that. So my guess would be
2 years at what million?
So the Broncos, actually it had been reported the Broncos were looking at 18. So I'm going to guess 19 or 18 million.
You're exactly right.
Yeah.
36 million. He got 18 million a year.
Yeah,
this guy
great.
Was fighting for a starting job or a position on the team.
He was fighting for a backup job last year.
Yeah.
He had one offer, the Vikings. The Bills sort of made an offer, but that was it at 2 million.
Teddy Bridgewater goes down and you know what happened there. Then Sam Bradford started bad and got worse and then the injuries kicked up and Case Keenum went on a run with that defensive and offensive line and skill players. He got, this may be his one contract, but he's set for life as of today.
It's amazing. And, you know, we know Case. He's mm-hmm. a wonderful guy. It's funny because didn't you think that everyone had said it starts with Cousins. Kirk Cousins signs, then the dominoes fall. But the most annoying thing happened. If you're a fan of Case Keenum, you notice this. The Vikings coach, Mike Zimmer, started to trash talk Case Keenum in the press. He said, like, oh, we don't know if he's going to revert to this. Now, what he was doing was trying to keep Case as a bargain option in case someone outbid them for Cousins. How do you do that to a quarterback who leads you to a 13-3 record? I thought that was, and he's supposed to be the classiest coach. No way. What was he doing?
I wonder if all these players realize once they get to about 25 years old that this is a total business and it's a sport second. The sport is on Sunday. The business is every other day of the week.
100%.
And I bet Case Keenum's a smart guy and says, you know what? I understand what Mike Zimmer has to do there. He has to protect both sides in case they keep me or go another way or can get a better option, which is Kirk Cousins. A lot of people think he's a better option. A lot of people don't.
I hear what you're saying, and they know it's a business, but why does Mike Zimmer have to affect Case Keenum's contract with other people just so he can play his game? I thought it was a bit tacky. And not only that, he ripped Bridgewater, and he ripped he kind of said nice things about Bradford.
But maybe Mike Zimmer rips everybody to try to keep everyone's costs down.
Yeah, it probably is going to work. And obviously, they have their quarterback, too.
Drew Brees stays 2 years. I think he got $25 million a year to stay with New Orleans.
I have a question about that. So Drew Brees is getting older. Have you noticed anything on the field when you watch Drew Brees in a Saints uniform? If I told you last year he was 27 or 39 or 40, whatever he is, would you have known the difference?
He actually looked smoother last year because there was less pressure on him to carry the team. He was one of those guys who would, like Matt Stafford, throw 600 balls a year because he had to, and they barely ran the ball. They'd have like a mishmash of running backs. Now they have Mark Ingram they're actually using, and Alvin Kamara, who's a star they got for nothing. They don't even have to pay him for a couple more years. It feels like a year ago you would have said Drew Brees may be gone and they're going to go a different direction because they want to save money.
Yeah, there was that moment.
Now he's been kind of reinvigorated. That team's a competitive team just overnight.
Yeah, it's great. And I think it was a no-brainer that they were going to re-sign him, right? Like, there's reports there was another offer out there. They kind of let it last into free agency. I'm psyched. I think the Saints have a shot.
Yeah, and because they don't have to really pay anybody. Ingram, they already have locked up. They don't have any high end.
Alvin Kamara is on a rookie deal.
Mike Thomas, the wide receiver, I'm curious to know what his contract is. But it may be 2 years down the road before they have to pay him. They're kind of in a window now where they don't have to pay any of these guys.
Yeah, and they all of a sudden build a defense. It's a totally new Saints team. You know, they lost in the Minnesota Miracle. If they had won that game, they could have gone into Philly and given them a hard time.
No doubt.
So they're right there knocking on the door. But is it funny? The NFC South is brutal, by the way.
So the Vikings have Kirk Cousins, right?
Yes. This on paper looks like a good thing going on in Minnesota.
I think this may be a tough one for Kirk Cousins. There may have been too much coverage of him over the past, actually 2 years, but especially the past 2 months. He's going to have to throw for 35 touchdowns and 10 picks next year to be worthy of the money he's got.
Oh, they better win some playoff games,
right?
Because they already got to the NFC title game with Case Keenum, said he's not good enough, brought in Kirk Cousins. You're right, and we know how free agency works in every sport. You get these huge expectations, and it's hard to deliver.
You know, I also would like to look at the numbers for Kirk Cousins over the past 2 or 3 years and the next 3 years going forward. He may make more money in a five-year window than any NFL athlete ever, and definitely in the past, but he got two franchise tags, which paid him a lot. And then he's got a lot of guaranteed cash with this new contract.
Yeah. And then he can sign another one.
Right. We're kind of inching towards almost guaranteed contracts here. And he may be a kind of – Kirk Cousins may be known more for his contract almost being guaranteed than his football play down the road.
Yeah. Let's talk about the situation for a second, though. Minnesota, you got Stephon Diggs, you got Adam Thielen, you got Kyle Rudolph, who was a monster the second half of the season. Then you got Dalvin Cook,
the rookie running back, who will be back fresh and ready to go.
Yeah. Then you have a defense that was ferocious last year. I don't know how they're going to pay all those defensive guys. So on paper, when you just look at those elements, you're like, whoa. So a lot of people are going to say, like, this has got to be the pick in the NFC.
Well, you'd think that it has to be Eagles, Minnesota, and then the next tier. But you know what? There's some people who have Green Bay odds-wise ahead.
People don't view it. I don't think the sharp money views it that way at all.
Who do you think are the top two favorites to make the Super Bowl?
I'm sure the Packers are up there. They always are.
Because of Aaron Rodgers?
Yes.
That's not enough.
You're telling me... But Aaron Rodgers was hurt last year. Minnesota does not necessarily make that run if Aaron Rodgers is healthy. But also, too, you got those NFC South teams. Carolina, New Orleans, and Atlanta. Atlanta was as talented as anyone. I don't think do you really think Minnesota and Philly are that much better than them?
No, but it seems like everything's in place at every position. There don't seem to be weaknesses on those two teams. Philly actually added Michael Bennett, which is a nice, sneaky little pickup. Atlanta, to me, just seems...
So let's take Atlanta as an example. All right, Philly beat Minnesota in Minnesota 38-7 in the NFC title game, 38-7. Atlanta, in a freezing cold day, out of their element, took them to the last play of the game.
Right.
Pretty much outplayed them in the first half, especially. Probably would have won if it was warm. They are way more talented than some of these teams.
All right, that's fair enough. But I still think that the Packers get too much Aaron Rodgers love, and there's not enough of a surrounding cast around him.
I hear you, but don't you sometimes think when you're looking at your Super Bowl pick every fall, you're like, well, you know, the Packers.
It's like Tom Brady. It doesn't matter who the supporting cast is.
Yeah, I think the one team that has fallen off is the Seahawks. They're probably not in our discussion. More the Rams might be more of a favorite out there.
Seahawks are moving on from the past era defensively, not so much offensively, defensively. And I think they think we have Russell Wilson for the second half of his career. We'll get another eventually, as long as we have him. But we have to start revamping.
Yeah, maybe they're taking a small break. Although, it's the NFC. A new team emerges every year. Nobody saw Philadelphia coming. No one in a million years would have seen that. Nobody saw Carolina coming a couple years ago. Nobody, you have no one saw the Cowboys' success 2 years ago. It's going to be, forget it. Predictions in the NFC are useless.
NFL offseason's great. The free agency.
Oh, dude. It's the second best season in the world. The fall with college and pro is the best. NFL offseason, March, April is awesome.
You know, free agency may top the draft this year.
Well, the draft's got five quarterbacks. Right. So that is going to be pretty epic.
So who is out of play for a quarterback now?
Okay.
Denver's out of play or not out
no.
of play?
No. See, that's a thing with Case Keenum. He probably didn't want to be a bridge quarterback because that's what happened with Jared Goff
in
L.A.
A two-year contract means they have no commitment to you. Like Mike Glennon from the Bears.
Yeah, and the Broncos sit at number five. So say they take a Josh Allen there. It's probably not ideal. Case Keenum probably wanted to think, give me 4 years to play some football. Probably not going to happen. So who's left? I mean, Arizona's fully left.
Fully. And the Bills are way in now.
Fully
they
left,
they weren't a month ago. They were not. Now they are.
Yeah. They were talking about bringing back Tyrod. Yeah, they're in. Cleveland is all set. They brought in Tyrod for this year, but they're probably going to draft a guy.
Here's a sneaky team that I think is in the quarterback market in the first round, Miami Dolphins.
Oh, not sneaky. Everyone thinks they're taking Baker Mayfield.
I thought I was cool about that.
No. Look at a mock draft. Baker Mayfield to Miami is the most popular. Google it right now. It's everywhere. Yeah, I mean, why wouldn't they be? Tannehill's coming off an injury.
Yeah, but Tannehill is in what should be his age prime, but it always feels like he's just kind of a placeholder, even though his stats are pretty good.
Yeah, the public does not like Ryan Tannehill. Have you ever seen like somebody say, I'm going to go out and buy a Ryan Tannehill jersey?
He is kind of... He has no legacy around him. He has no brand around him. It's not like, you know what? He's a tick away from being an upper-tier quarterback. Nobody talks about him.
Can I ask a question? If you were looking, say you put Denver back in the mix, Denver, Buffalo, Arizona, and let's put another, in Cleveland, which to you is the most attractive there?
I think Arizona still has some talent on the roster. You have David Johnson. You have an older Larry Fitzgerald finishing up, and they still have some good players on their defense. They've cooled off the past couple of years, but I would say...
Say you were Case Keenum, and like the big picture, where you live...
If I were Case Keenum, I would have gone to the Arizona Cardinals if the offer was the same as the Broncos.
Really? See, and I think a lot of people like think the Cardinals are still a mess. I think they go way back. You know, they might not bring back Honey Badger. Like, there's something about that franchise that feels snake-bitten. I know they got to the Super Bowl, but there's not a lot of faith in them.
They have a Clippers feel to them.
Yes, exactly. So I think that's why. The Denver's the opposite. They are nothing but outstanding. So,
all right, Perloff, we got to get to the brackets. We're going to take a little break here. Regroup. Take a breath. Somebody run over and get me some oatmeal or something because I need some food. Lindsay, give me some oatmeal. Something.
Need the money.
I'll give you some money. All right, coming up next, our boy Matt Norlander from CBS Sports. He's going to help us with our brackets. We're the Leisurman.
All right, welcome back to the Leisurman Pod. Perloff and Paps here. We're now joined by an old friend of the Leisurman, Matt Norlander, CBS Sports, senior college basketball writer.
Wow.
Now, Matt, I want you to take a hypothetical here. Say you're talking to two guys who know a lot of the top 10 teams, maybe top 15 teams, but might not know their brackets in and out.
Total hypothetical.
Total hypothetical. Not me and Paul.
Not at us.
So when you're talking to us, remember, we might not know everything about the 8-9 seeds, but we want to start. We're both mad that Duke and Michigan State have to play so early. Can you explain what the committee was doing?
Yeah, but why would you be mad that they would have to play early? Wouldn't you want to have a closer guarantee that two awesome teams would play in the tournament? Because if they were on opposite sides of the bracket, it would be a much tougher proposition that they would actually meet.
Well, I put Tom Izzo in at least the Sweet 16 every year as a rule. And I was going to have Duke win it all this year, so now I'm stuck.
Norlander, this would be like in the All-Valley Championship, you put Johnny versus Daniel LaRusso in round two, and the whole movie would be ruined. Daniel LaRusso has to go through all the Cobra Kais to finish against Johnny Lawrence, the defending champion of the All-Valley title in Karate Kid. That's why they didn't do it. You want to be able to hit a home run. Come on. You saw Karate Kid.
But I actually had you at 4.5 minutes before your first 80s movies reference. So congrats on getting me under.
No chance.
Fair. The reason why, just real quick, the reason why Michigan State and Duke are where they are in the bracket and why they're so close, and I won't get into too much of the minutia here, Michigan State only has two wins against teams in the field. And those wins are good. They beat Purdue and they beat North Carolina. But the 27 other victories they have, just weren't as good. So they did not have enough at the top of their resume to validate putting them on the two line despite having a really strong record. Now, why are they where they are? Because they get geographic preference. So they're in the Omaha Midwest Regional. So if they get to the second weekend, the committee afforded them a travel favor. Meanwhile, Duke, where it fell on the two seed line, had to be sent to the Midwest Regional for the benefit of bracket balance. and it could not be the two with Virginia in the South. So that's why they are where they are. I know it's a little technical, and some people don't want to hear those kinds of reasons, but that is legitimately why we have that. Personally, I love it. I'm going to Pittsburgh, and I love the prospect that you could have Duke, Grayson Allen, play Oklahoma, Trae Young. Those are the two most polarizing, hated players in the sport in the past 5 to 7 years, and then you could have Duke play Michigan State. Obviously, both of those are title favorites.
But, Matt, I look at the other two threes. Like, you have a Purdue, Texas Tech, and Tennessee, Cincinnati. I mean, it's just obvious. Michigan State and Duke and Kansas are such national teams. It feels so lopsided when you're just looking at it from the outside. I got to be honest. Like, I'm not fired up for some of the other brackets. Am I making a mistake?
Yeah. Come on, man. You're definitely making a mistake. Because here's the thing. This tournament will provide you with shocking results and dramatic games in places that you never expected. And it happens every single year. So we're still going to get big-time programs that are playing in the Elite Eight, Sweet 16, Final Four. We'll still get that, but you're still, I'm telling you, I'm guessing that you're like, you're treating the West like it doesn't even exist. It's doing nothing for you. But just watch. We could have Missouri giving Xavier a really close game, and if Michael Porter Jr. goes for 25 in that, that's going to be one of the biggest storylines of the first weekend. So I understand why you looked at the bottom right corner of your bracket and you see three major programs, three Hall of Fame coaches, and elsewhere it's kind of lackluster because Texas Tech doesn't have a lot of pizzazz and brand value, and Tennessee is a three. You couldn't name a player on that team. I get all of that. But the bracket overall, if you really do some reading and listen to us folk who are paid to cover the sport 12 months a year, this is one of the most truly balanced brackets and best seeding jobs the committee's done in the past 10 or 15 years, in my opinion.
Do you have a personal favorite team? And I don't mean like to root for, but you're like, wow, this team is under the radar. I'm not talking like you know, Georgia State, but kind of a mid-level team that nobody talks about.
In this particular bracket.
Or any of them.
Well, I think Rhode Island is that kind of team. Now, it has been slipping a little bit. They've got a fascinating coach in Dan Hurley, who they're fascinating in general because Pitt and UConn are going to chase after Hurley. They have jobs open. So you've got Rhode Island that's going to try and make a run here. And meanwhile, it's got that kind of drifting in the background. To me, it's an interesting subplot to the run. But they've got six guards, 3-point guards. They are very good, and they are good enough to beat Duke. They would have to go nuts from three because Duke is so big on the boards, they can't compete with them. I don't know if that's so under the radar. I will say one more. St. Bonaventure, which goes up against UCLA Tuesday night, if they can win that game, they've got Jalen Adams and Matt Mobley. They just had the way they play, they're the exact kind of team that people could instantly fall in love with because they come from in the middle of nowhere. You don't see them in the tournament every other year, and they play a very fun style. Keep an eye on them. I want to throw you just one more here.
Love it.
Here's why I love it. Here's why I love this tournament. Because every year there is an upset that comes out of nowhere. Like, there are the 3 to 5 games that people start talking about. They get trendy. But you'll look up on a Thursday afternoon or Friday after dinner, and all of a sudden there's a 2, 3, or 4 seed in trouble, and almost no one was really talking about it. Everyone loves Michigan. That game against Montana is going to be within 4 to 6 points with 3 minutes to go. The Grizzlies can absolutely do it. They are good enough, and they've only lost twice in about 2.5 months. Keep an eye on them.
Okay, when I look at the number one seeds, Virginia, Xavier, Villanova, Kansas, I was sort of half-joking because I'm an Ivy Leaguer. Not sure if you knew that, Matt, that Penn could be the first 16 seed to ever win one. But of the number ones, is there anyone you see who's in real danger of going out earlier than expected?
Well, I mean, are you pumping Penn because that's the school you wish you got into instead
wow.
of
Wow.
Oh, by the way.
Return a volley.
You know, my brother went to Penn. I'm from Philly, too. So my dad went to Penn. My brother went to Penn. I didn't want to stay close to home. I got into Penn. I went to Dartmouth. Come on.
Penn was your safety school.
You're from Philadelphia. I've never heard that either. Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
In terms of the one seed, Kansas has the toughest match. It's the first time since 89 that an Ivy League team is a 16, and Princeton famously almost knocked off Georgetown there. The weakest one seed, in my opinion, is Kansas, by the way. So if you're going to look at the best possible potential, it is that game. Kansas has a lot of good wins. I'm not sold on their personnel overall, but I don't think any of these games are going to be close. And by the way, I am a weirdo. I actually love the fact that a 16 has never beaten a 1, and I want that to continue because it's the one. It's one of the very few things about the tournament that we still haven't seen happen.
Right.
And once it happens, we never get it back. So we're constantly chasing that, and I love the chase. Once you get it once, it's not as special the second time or the third time. So I actually root for the ones to keep winning. I like this streak to keep going.
All right, for those who are listening and are still about to fill out their brackets, do you have any advice like to win a contest? I have a theory with the bracket contest that you have to pretty much put ones and twos in your final four because odds are with you. But during the early rounds, you have to pick a couple upsets. If you go too much chalk, you can't win. If you go way too much on the upsets, you can't win.
I agree. So listen, the results are ridiculous in terms of how tough it is to win a pool if you're with, 50 people, 80 people, 100 people. Forget about if you're even in a bigger one than that. Here's just some general guidelines. An insane, insane stat is that a 2 seed every year except 1 in the past two decades has failed to make the second weekend. So while you're looking at your bracket and you're thinking like, how can I not pick all these 4 twos to break through to the Sweet 16? Just know that it almost always happens. We either get the instance where you get a Duke picked off by a Lehigh or something like that, and a 15 pulls it off, Norfolk State did against Missouri, or that 7 or that 10 pulls off the upset in the second round. So keep that in mind. You want to do that. And almost every year since the field expanded in 1985, at least one double-digit seed reaches the second weekend. Last year, Xavier was the only one as an 11, and that was actually a rarity because usually we get 2, if not 3 double-digit seeds that can get through to the regional semifinals. So keep that in mind. Paul, you're absolutely right. You don't want to go nuts with these upsets, but the trickiest part, as always, is you have to nail the upset. And one of my personal rules, I think a lot of people are like, don't go with the super trendy upset unless there's data that backs it up. And if that's the case, then you probably don't even need to be listening to advice anyway. But everyone loves South Dakota State over Ohio State. I talked with Chris Holtman on Monday night. He told me he asked one of his, ops guys to go get him any national pundits that were picking against him. He thought he might get 4 or 5 back. He said he brought back a stack. Everyone is picking against the Buckeyes here. That's why you fade the public. Take the Buckeyes to beat their Jackrabbits.
Norlander, do you have a personal favorite name from tournaments past that was famous for a couple weeks and then we never hear from again, like Ali Farouk Manesh from Northern Iowa? I've nailed that pronunciation, by the way. Do you have a personal favorite?
Well, TJ Sorrentine. See, I grew up about 10 minutes from the Vermont campus. So TJ Sorrentine from the parking lot to beat Syracuse back in 05 is a personal favorite. Memorable shot, huge upset, big for that league. He's certainly one that that springs to mind. Farouk Manesh is another one just because here's the thing about Sorrentine and Farouk Manesh and Bryce Drew is they have singular moments that will last for decades overall. That's why they stand out, I guess, more than others who like good players on teams that make Final Fours. Yeah, they have memorable runs like Steph Curry. It almost transcends the tournament, Paul.
Right.
I think his legend started with the tournament, but he changed the way we think about Davidson. Like, people are going to consider picking Davidson over Kentucky because of the fact that Steph Curry played there. It's just
7 years ago.
Factor in. I know it's wild, right? It's insane. But those are a couple that spring to mind. Jai Lewis at George Mason. He was a 6'5" Charles Barkley type that basically pushed them to a Final Four in 2006, and I maintain that Mason run and the upset of UConn really is like one of the 4 or 5 best things to ever happen to the NCAA.
I could sit around with guys drinking beers and just throw out names from college basketball past, like Pops Mensah-Bonsu from George. Is that George Washington? Was he on? That was Van Pelt's favorite player.
He was, and that George Washington team was the last team to go undefeated in Atlantic 10 play. Yes, I have random stats like that just buried in my brain. I apologize.
Okay, Matt, we'll let you go in a second. Are there any more coaches you talked to that you want to name drop now? Because that was
Calipari. It was a name drop, but Holtman, listen, it was within the context of the discussion of the brackets here, and it was why you should take Ohio State to beat South Dakota State. I'm not going to egregiously name drop anyone else, but Perloff, if you want to mention the fact that you went to an Ivy League school again, we can do that before we wrap up.
One other thing Norlander leads the league in is being in the background of announcers on college basketball games and me seeing him. I'll be sitting home on a Tuesday night, and there'll be like a Seton Hall St. John's game on, and I see you typing in the background. You're always right behind like Bill Raftery, and I always want to text you during the game and ask you to like wave to my kids or something like that. Can I do that? Because you're always on camera.
You are certainly allowed to do that, and we'll see. I don't have any control over this, by the way. It's just where the people that are in charge of putting the credentials are in the arena. So I don't know where I'm going to be.
You're a young, approachable, decent-looking guy. I think they put you behind the announcer, so it's more of a positive feel of the backdrop. I think it's on purpose.
That might be. Listen, look for me Thursday. This tournament is going to start in a great way. We get Trae Young immediately versus Rhode Island. That's a fantastic matchup, and I just love the fact that we're going right in. It's the one player everyone wants to watch, 12:15 CBS Thursday. That's whoa. I'll be in the building. Be sure to look for me. And, guys, thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, and when you come back to Connecticut, we'll get beers, and I could tell you my math SAT score if you're interested, Matt. Thank you for the time.
I'm not, but thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks a lot. That's Matt Norlander from CBS Sports, senior college basketball writer.
Wow.
Great guy. We've hung out before.
He's a number one seed in snarkiness. What's going on there?
I love it. He brought a lot of – well, this is his month. I mean, this is where he's infallible.
Oh, yeah. Now, he's sort of the top of the mountain.
You
right
talked
now.
To him in June. He's just a kind of a little guy in the corner, not really doing much.
Yeah. He was throwing out some advanced stats there.
What's your go-to name from tournament history? Like Harold Arsenault?
Of course it's Harold Arsenault. Fennis Dembo is right there.
Weber State Harold Arsenault. Yeah. Kevin Pitts-Noggle from West Virginia.
Wait, where'd Fennis Dembo, Wyoming? He was a big deal. Clarence Weatherspoon was in the tournament like 9 years in a row, Southern Miss.
You love that guy. King Rice from North Carolina is a nice name that I like to throw out because you don't want to just go all obscure schools.
Right. I mean, the big one is obviously God, Cham, God, Providence.
Who's the guy who felt like they're in school the long? We've done this before, but top of your head.
What is the guy? He was an Iowa big man.
Jess Settles?
No.
Hummel?
Not Robbie
Hummel. He's Purdue.
I want to say Wade Looking Bill. But there was a guy.
He was more of a swing man.
Yeah. I don't know. Who's your guy? You got one?
I'm going to give you a lot of points for the way Wade Looking.
If a guy's like a senior now, we're like, wow, this guy's been in college for like, Grayson Allen's been in college since I was 13 years old.
Grayson Allen, he's got male pattern baldness.
I know. And also the guard, what's it, Carter on West Virginia, who does have male pattern baldness.
Oh, yeah. Wendell. What's his name?
He's amazing, but yeah, something like that. Wendell Carter somewhere else. He's great, but he's been in college for at least 15 years. Oh, Pitts-Noggle, by the way, did play. He had about a 12-year career in college.
My favorite probably is Lawrence Moten back in the Syracuse days, and he was 27 when he graduated. That's a little note for people that don't know.
Yeah, I think I screwed up. Yeah, Wade Looking Bill. Now, let me
Iowa.
Get you he was at Iowa.
Probably career 12 points, 6 rebounds.
Yeah, exactly. 6 points a game, total rebounds, 2.68.
Oh, I overrated him.
Why do I know this guy? I don't even remember, but Wade Looking Bill.
He was very pale and had kind of like a broken nose.
Yeah. But it's funny. Matt was so right. There's going to be like four. I'm going to get so into this in a few days. Ugh. And right now, I got to admit, he was playing up Rhode Island. I know you're a bit of a Rhode Island fan.
Yeah, I went to a URI football game and saw they have a really nice campus, and I went to their basketball stadium. I haven't gone to a home game yet, but URI, killer uniforms as well.
And they're really good this year.
They got to, I think they were 12th in the nation at one point.
Yeah, and also we got Providence with Ed Cooley. He's going to be great. Yeah, I need a hero, Paul. I need a team to root for. Obviously, I have Villanova.
If you want to co-opt Rhode Island with me, that'd be fine. I'd love
I'm on that Rhode Island bandwagon. I like Penn, obviously. I don't think they're going to win, but
right.
Otherwise, I'll tell you one team I have a team I don't like. Can you guess the one team I don't want to
besides
watch?
Duke?
No, I like this year's Duke team because I love Marvin Bagley III.
I'm guessing you don't like watching
the team I don't like to watch. I've been kind of ripping them off.
Kansas.
No, Kansas. I don't like watching Kansas.
Right.
But nobody likes Kansas. Kansas has always been sort of they always kill you.
Serviceable.
Virginia. They play such hard defense, and they're really likable, nice guys.
You don't like hard defense?
I do not like Virginia's style. Every time I tune into them, it's 24-7 at halftime.
You wish they would play a nice, soft 2-3 zone, let people get up court?
I like the Warriors. I like offense. I'm I do not like, I can't believe UVA, that is the most, it's UVA, Cincinnati, and Tennessee are 1-2-3.
By the way, when we're driving here, we're in Los Angeles this week, the Leisureman, and we drive past Loyola Marymount's campus.
It's so nice.
Is that school, can you think of a school that's so branded from a 2 or 3 year run of college basketball, Bo Kimble, Hank Gathers, Jeff Fryer, and those guys?
Yeah.
I'll be 90, and if I hear the phrase Loyola Marymount, I'll be like, Hank Gathers. And I get
Philly, Bo Kimble and Hank Gathers grew up on the courts of West Philadelphia, not too far from where I grew up.
That school, by the way, is gorgeous.
Yeah, I know. It's no Pepperdine. That is the spot. Pepperdine out in Malibu.
They should rank schools for that feel like you're not on a college campus because it's too beautiful. Pepperdine's on a bluff in Malibu overlooking the ocean. I'm sure it's expensive and I'm sure it's a good school, but I mean, how could you go to that campus and be accepted and not go?
I have no idea. I mean, for me, there's a little too much. How about UC Santa Barbara? You ever been there?
No.
It's like there's more volleyball courts than classrooms.
That's a true fact.
Yeah, that's actually that's a number that they brag about.
All right, a couple other things to go before we wrap up the Leisureman podcast today. Tom Brady on Stephen Colbert's show, chugging a beer. Now, let's preface this with, we've had Ross Tucker, the former NFL offensive lineman, fill in on the Dan Patrick show many times, and he told Dan a story years ago that Brady was an unbelievable beer chugger. He said early in his career, when Ross was on the team for like a year or two, he took out the lineman out, and Brady just crushed everybody. And now Brady's all healthy and doesn't do that stuff. So when I saw the clip on Colbert, I wasn't shocked at all.
No, I wasn't either. And, you know, Brady did kill it. I love Brady. I think Brady seems like one of the nicer guys in sports. And I don't know why. What is it that people dislike about him?
I think he is the face of every high school quarterback that nerds and people who are just average guys were jealous of in high school. I really believe this. I think he's the penultimate high school quarterback.
But he wasn't even that big. But he's not like that.
I just got an eye roll from some guy who walked by the studio. Yeah. I think we're in some guy's studio.
Yeah.
Big eye roll from some guy.
Oh, yeah. We got to wrap it
soon. I think we got to wrap it up pretty soon. Huge eye roll from my man Stan out there. But Brady he's got the girl, he's got the money, he's got the success, he's got the looks. We don't want anyone to have everything.
That must be it.
That's it.
But has he ever said an unkind word about anyone that you've ever heard, except maybe the NFL a little bit? And he was actually pretty nice to them considering what they did.
Yeah, I'm sure. And everyone would love him to be your quarterback.
You know why I like him, though? Because there was a sports writer, a friend of mine up in Boston, who Brady saw was in the restaurant and didn't come up and say hi, but bought him like a $150 bottle of wine and had it delivered to his table because he had heard that he got engaged.
Brady buying off the media? Question mark?
Oh, man, I knew I was going to start a scandal today at some point.
Last topic, when we're on the road, we always look for good places to eat. What is your Yelp score cutoff? Because I'm getting pretty, I still use Yelp. People think I'm using the wrong thing. I ask locals for good places. But it used to be even 4.0 was the cutoff whether I would try a restaurant or not. If it's 3.9, I can't go. If it's 4.1, I'm in.
You can only have one blank star. That's exactly where it is.
I'm now getting up to if it's 4.3 or bust, I'm getting a little picky in my older age.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, we don't have that much time left on this planet. We can't go for 3.5s.
But do you do that? I was looking at taco places. I got them on my phone right now. And there's a thing you could do. You could put whatever type of food and then put near me.
Yeah.
And you'll find the physically closest places. No offense, Taqueria Sanchez, 3.9.
No.
It's 0.2 miles from here. We can't go there, can we?
I don't think
so. And they're probably awesome.
Yeah, they're probably great.
But then Pepe's Tacos on Centinela Avenue, 4.5, and we've been there.
That is a solid 4.5. I'd even give him a 5.
Yeah. All right. We're going to go eat some...
Speaking of which, let's get out of here.
Let's get some tacos. Thanks for listening to the Leisureman Podcast. Lindsay, great job today as always.
Thanks, man.
Nice. You crushed that. We're at Leisureman. Take care.